Success or failure, experiences you go through help define you and shape you if you're willing to learn from them and grow from them. And quite frankly, and it sucks, but adversity usually fuels the most growth. And that is the secret sauce of developments as a human, not just as a hockey player, is you go through hard things and you go through miserable things, you go through failures, and you look in the mirror and you decide to attack areas that you have to improve to grow from the experiences you went through. And that's what these young guys need to do. Some of them had great playoffs. Some of them didn't play as good as they'd like. And they need to use that to learn and motivate them and to drive them to go attack things in the off season to make themselves better hockey players.
Seth Appert, over the course of the weekend on the heels of a loss for the Amerks in Game 5 against Syracuse. Now Seth, as an individual, takes the next step in his career as he is part of the Lindy Ruff staff with the Buffalo Sabres. Welcome in to Sabres Live. Quite a roller coaster of emotions, I'm sure, for Seth, but also very much just kind of the life one lives in pro hockey, right, Marty? You've lived it, the up and down, and taking advantage of the next step when it comes your way.
I think when it comes to coaching, especially at the AHL level, it's probably even what's the next step mentality. Not because you always are looking for what jobs and where can you go, but a player you can elevate, right? If you're a Rochester Americans Sabres prospect, you elevate to the Sabres whenever that time comes or whatnot. For a coach, that it can mean a lot of different things. So I think that Seth Appert has done a fantastic job, has earned a promotion to the National Hockey League, and it most likely was going to be somewhere else, and happy that it is in Buffalo, because I think he'll be very, very good on Lindy Ruff's staff with everything that that he can bring and all his experience that he's had with those players over the last few years.
Well, Seth Appert coaching for 4 years, and you know, the first one notwithstanding, because it was pandemic shortened, and obviously there were no playoffs that particular year, but he's been in the playoffs every year since, and this season really showed just a tremendous second half of the year, which had them battling for first place in the division right till the very last hour of the regular season. Lindy Ruff has hired Seth Appert to his coaching staff, and the Sabres head coach joins us now here on Sabres Live. Hi, Lindy. How are you? And thank you for taking the time today.
I'm well, and you're welcome. It's a good day for us.
and extend on that thought. Why is it a good day in wake of this, you know, this hiring by you?
Well, I've had a lot of great conversations with Seth, and Seth is very familiar with, you know, this core group of young players that he's helped develop, that he's had good success with at the American League, that he's done such a great job. In conversations that I've had with him on how we want to have the team play, the individuals that are on the team that he has such a great relationship with, it really felt with when I talked to Kevin that it was going to be a no-brainer with a lot of great candidates out there. But I thought first and foremost, looking at Seth from the inside was going to be the right move.
Lindy, let me ask you a couple of things. What are Seth's responsibilities going to be on the staff, if you've already discussed that? And your staff is complete now. So what's everybody kind of expertise will be when you look at, you know, your staff, your coaching staff, and their responsibilities?
Well, first, Seth is going to work hard with the forward group, along with myself, the power play responsibilities, which we'll collaborate on, but that'll be one of his major areas. Matty Ellis will be going upstairs. He'll be our eye in the sky. He'll be also in charge of working with centermen. I think the idea of getting a lot better with faceoff percentage and having the puck more, becoming a team that can get up in that top 15 when we're taking a faceoff, you know, in the different zones is going to be really important for us. So we're looking at, we're going to share a lot of responsibilities, but the major areas, when you look at that, Marty's going to stay with the D with the penalty killing. I think he's done a tremendous job developing the young defenseman. So I'm excited about where we've got every guy at here.
How long have you known Seth?
Not very long.
No.
No, I didn't know a lot about him even when I got here and got the job. But I think when you look around and you look at the success of a lot of guys, he's been in the American League now 4 years. I think he's done a tremendous job. Instantly has a rapport and relationship, which is highly respected by the players and what he's done. It's valuable information for me. But I think most importantly, we have to spend a lot of time together. We're going to be together day in, day out once the season starts. And to get comfortable with him, I talked to him. Really, I talked to him on the phone several times. I talked to Kevin about him. Kevin was a resource that, you know, said, you know, you should talk to him. I think he's a guy that you may like. And really, when I got to talk to him, and we got to talk hockey, and we actually sat here this morning and spent a couple hours talking about players and how we want to play and roles and responsibilities and just get more and more comfortable. He's a real easy guy to be around. I think he's a demanding guy from his players. And we talked the same language, which was really important to me.
A few things. This is not a question. It's more of a comment. He's an easygoing guy, smart hockey mind, all of that. He's a goalie. That part you should know, Lindy. He's a goalie. So that's all the good qualification of a goaltender, and you should know that. So the other part is I remember when Brian McCutchen, after 3 years in Rochester, joined your staff. That transition, do you feel like it? I mean, it's years later, but it's a little bit of that same transition where you have somebody that now has had all that experience with some of the younger players and the prospects that are going to come up that will be using this communication tool with the players?
I do, Marty. I think, again, that's one of the most important parts is that relationship that he's built. The players understand. A lot of the players have played for him. They understand how he wants each individual to play. And in the conversations that I had with him about this is what we want and what is non-negotiable inside of how we want the team to play, it was an easy fit because everything that he talked about how his team played, the way we want the team up here to play, seemed seamless. So, you know, whether he was a goalie or not, Marty, I don't know if that played a part.
Definitely played a part. I just wanted you to know that. And it's funny that you say, you know, the communication was easy because, you know, like back in the days, your communication with the goaltenders, not saying that wasn't your strong suit, but I feel like you're better with the goalies after they're done playing. Like with me, our communication now is way better than it was when we played. So that's good.
I couldn't communicate with you, Marty, because I couldn't get a word in. And you know that. So now yeah. I just interrupt you all the time.
Yeah, I'll take the blame. I appreciate that. Thank you for making me feel better about it. So I like that. So.
Lindy, amidst the heartbreaking game five for the Amerks in the sense that the, you know, I think the real takeaway was how much they wish they could have won for the sold out crowd. And I think every single player addressed that over the last couple of days. What did you see from the Amerks players through the course of that series that, you know, encourages you, you know, moving forward?
Well, you know, I would probably look at game four as the defining moment for me with a team that, you know, was down 3-0 and then fought their way back to end up winning a hockey game to force game five. You got to give that group and the coaching staff a lot of credit because when you look at a game, you're going to start the third period and getting that quick goal to get them back in the hockey game and then, you know, tying up the game late. Just to get there told me a lot about the character of the team. Game five, I thought, you know, again, tough game. And I think it's always tough to have that, you know, that big break in between game four, game five. I think actually Syracuse was able to flush out, you know, what happened to them and reset, where instantly, I think if you'd have played a night later or two nights later, might have been the advantage going back to Rochester. But you're looking at a veteran Syracuse team, and I really think our young players gained a lot of experience. I thought a couple bad things happened early in game five. You know, a couple crazy bounces, you know, a couple shots that went off people that, you know, normally don't happen. But that happens. And again, to fight your way back, to get the game to 3-2. But and lose probably your best defenseman in the course of that game, the guy that can, you know, help break up and create more offense. They were still hanging right there. And I really felt they would find a way to tie that hockey game.
What are some of the non-negotiable? I don't need a list, but where's the focus? And have you guys had video sessions already as a coaching staff to prepare for next year and really build those non-negotiable?
Well, non-negotiable really is we're going to talk about competing, Marty. We're going to talk about puck battles, 50-50 puck battles. You know, we know the other team is going to try to win those as much as we are. To get in those battles, to compete, to get into the body, to end plays. Those are the areas that we want to be really strong at, that we make it really miserable for the other team, you know, to play, that they know that our compete is going to be at a higher level than their compete. We want to take a lot of pride in that. When we looked at some video this morning that Seth and I were watching and talking about, you know, how this team needs to play to be successful, that, I mean, there's a lot of great stuff. I mean, there's a lot of great stuff inside of the game. There was a lot of great stuff in the past couple of years. But I think admittedly, in talking to all the players and spending time with the coaches here and watching some video, we all have to find a little higher level, a higher level of compete, a higher level of play, playing the game quicker, tracking and back-checking harder. Willingness to be in shot lanes when the game is on the line. Maybe there's times you're not always there, but it's something that we're going to demand.
Lindy, because you've identified yourself and Seth as you know, the primary catalyst for coaching the power play, and because it was a talking point for most of this past season, that it wasn't quite at the level it was before. Like, did you and Seth immediately... Have you immediately kind of landed on any talk about it specifically as far as, you know, the philosophies that you share in that area of the game?
Really talked about, you know, where the NHL power plays are at and the movement inside of NHL power plays. And even more, the way most teams are starting to kill now, where, you know, they're set up in a diamond, they're set up where they're taking away the flank shots, that you have to get some motion. You have to have your bumper player be almost the most important player on the ice to support wherever the pressure is coming from, to relieve that pressure, to create the down low 2-on-1. So all that inside, you know, when you look around, some of the best power plays, even inside the game this year, they had their ups and downs. I think early in the year, the fact that you lose Thompson to a broken hand, that's a big hit to your power play. And I think sometimes it's hard to recover. But knowing that there are ways that with motion and creating a little bit more deception, I think we can be more effective.
Lindy, quick one for me. I know you got to go. You said when we did the Remembering RJ ceremony that you used to turn the volume up just to listen to RJ when you rewatched the tape. I'm asking you this. Will you watch the pregame, the intermission, and the postgame with Duffer and I to see what we're saying? Because I've got to know if I got to be on my best behavior or if I can say whatever I want.
I am gonna listen, Marty, and I hope you guys are on your best behavior. And I really hope that you give me as many thrills. You two guys give me as many thrills as RJ gave me.
That sounds like off-season conditioning for me. Thanks, Lindy. Appreciate that.
You're welcome, Duffer. You're welcome.
Okay. There's Lindy Ruff, and here's what his staff looks like as he has added Seth Appert to it today. And obviously, Seth, I shouldn't say obviously, but by the way, Seth is actually going to be addressing the media tomorrow from Rochester, where he has been the last 4 years, and he will perhaps bring Amir Gulati with him on the drive down the throughway, because Amir has been a real important person for him organizationally in a video role with Rochester. So congratulations to Amir as well, along with Seth, as they join Lindy's staff. It really has been a super fun dynamic in Rochester the last few years. So I know a lot of people would be genuinely, instinctively happy for Seth, but I think they're probably really excited for Amir as well. This is a tremendous opportunity for a very, very, very sharp, and trust me when I say that, because I've leaned on him for a lot of information over the last few years. You know, it's a great opportunity for Amir as well. So, I guess this is kind of what it feels right, in the sense that that's how you hope things might progress, right, in life, when you're with an organization that you have great respect for and they have great respect of your ability, that you only hope you can grow with it, right?
Absolutely. Sorry, I was I skip a beat here. My Spalding Link Wi-Fi log out, and then I log on to the right one. But yeah, that's what you hope for. You hire people, especially at the I'm going to say minor league, but the AHL, even the ECHL level, hoping that to graduate, to move on, to help your organization in the long run. And when Kevin Adams hired Seth Appert, 4 years ago now, right as the pandemic was going to start the season in a weird AHL that played all in one division and everything, it was to hopefully see the day where Seth Appert was going to graduate along with many other players, and he would have had an impact on graduating those type of players. And you look through the Buffalo Sabres, the players that have played with Seth Appert and Rochester, you know, the Peyton Krebs and Jack Quinn and JJ Peterka and Jacob Bryson and Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen and Devin Levi and many more to come. You know, it's going to be a right resource. And I mentioned Brian McCutchen. He was on the staff with Lindy for, I believe, 8 or 9 years after 3 years in Rochester. And yeah, you get to the NHL. I remember my first full season in the NHL. I got there. Cutchy wasn't on the staff, but in year two and year three and year four, he's there. And if I have to sometimes talk to somebody, communicate, and it was a different time where the head coach was the person you didn't talk to a lot, but I still feel that the assistant coaches are the ones that you go to, that you sit down with the iPad, that you do over video, that really shape you as you are. And Seth will have that opportunity to continue shaping a lot of those players now within the Sabres team moving on from Rochester.
What was your takeaway from Game 5?
My takeaway from Game 5 was, well, I shouldn't have asked Seth about all the high shots volume against in the first four game, because the shot volume was low in Game 5 for both teams. And it didn't, unfortunately, materialize into low goals against. I'm not saying it's the way the game is being played now. We see it in the NHL playoffs. A lot of low shots and you still get results. Just Syracuse leaning a little bit more on Rochester, winning a few more battles. It felt to me like a tennis match that at the end of the five sets, you're like, hey, I won 127 points and Duffer, you won 124 points and I win a five set match. But it was just like a small margin within the two teams for the, you know, for the duration of the five game, the five set match, if you want to call it.
Yeah, and the defenseman that Lindy was referencing that was a significant loss for the Amerks was Jeremy Davies, and that happened when the game was 2-1 in the second period. Was really unfortunate. Jeremy was unquestionably their number one defenseman this year and may have been able to help, you know, push the pace a little bit more as the game went on. Hard to tell. I'm still obviously concerned about low shot games and fear we are trending back to a difficult time for hockey. But you know, it's probably a wide brush comment for a later time, but I don't love seeing, you know, less than 40 shots in a game total. And again, you have to give credit to the defense, which Seth it talked about on Friday, the 1-1-3 that Syracuse likes to typically employ, and how you go about changing that, and players like Davies, especially with where Davies is at his 27-year-old having a career year. And he's blessed with good physical and offensive instincts, which really helped the team this year. So that was unfortunate, to say the least. And I'll tell you what, like, this won't surprise you at all, but full credit to Andrew Mossbrooks and the Amherst video team. Like, if you go to Amherst YouTube right now, like, there's a list of like 18 people that went through the Zoom cycle the day after the season-ending loss, and Andrew was the only one asking questions. So, you know, it was pretty impressive, just hearing from every player. And it leads me to this point about kind of, you know, what it's going to look like moving forward. The Amherst now need a new coach,
yes,
obviously, with Seth graduating. But, and this may not be super uncommon, but if you look at the unrestricted free agents off of this Amherst group right now, going into this coming summer. And again, a lot of these deals sometimes happen very quietly because they aren't full two-way NHL, AHL deals. Mm-hmm. But if you think about the names that we talked about this year and who was most important to helping the guys that are most likely to get the next chance with the Sabres, Mersch, Yops, Biro, Murray, Weisbach, Warren, Richard, Slagert, and on the blue line, like Davies, Ciccone, Prowl, there's potential, Marty, that none of these guys are back next year. But in their exit interviews, they all almost hinted like, I can't wait to be back want me back, because they love it there.
And this is what Rochester's built over the last few years. That's what Seth Appert has built, right? I mean, wanting to play for a team, for an organization, for a city, for a fan base. Not all of these guys will be back. That's impossible. It's impossible that all of these players will be back. Some of them may find other opportunities, maybe even, you know, getting an NHL look somewhere else. Maybe that's not going to be in Buffalo. But I would love to see 75% of those guys back. I think that would be like a number. If you can get 7 or 8 of the players that are on the list of unrestricted free agent, both at the AHL level and at the NHL level, if you're able to bring 7 or 8 of them back, I think you're building a good core. I think there's going to be a next wave of prospects from Buffalo that will recycle through, that is going to need veteran leadership. And all these players on the list, the Mershes, the Murray, the Prowl, the Ciccone, they definitely bring a lot of leadership to the group moving forward.
Davies also had my favorite line in the exit interviews when he said he finally got his invite to Brett Murray's wedding. So now he actually has at least one thing to do this summer. So as you can imagine, because you've lived that that era of your life, a lot of weddings for a lot of the guys. And Brett is top of the list for obviously many of his teammates. You know, like when you talk about guys coming back, especially up front, I could sit here and give you 9 forwards on the younger side that might be there.
Yeah.
So Ostlund, Kulik, Roseanne, Wahlberg, Savoy, Neuchev, Kisikov, Kozak, Olivia Nadeau, perhaps, after a first year in the ECHL, coming up to the AHL. There's 9 guys already up front, right? Like, it's pretty amazing.
No, it's really amazing. And again, that's the balance you have to find within an organization at the AHL level. How many of the players developing are you developing for the NHL for your team? And how many of the players are there to support that staff, right? My years in Rochester, it was actually 2 different organizations. And I'm not talking about 2 NHL organizations. It was Buffalo had their prospect there, and the Rochester Americans had their own free agents there. And they had to work together. But the free agents that we had in the Scotty Nicol and the Scott Metcalf and Dan Frawley and Craig Sharon and those players really helped building the group that went to back-to-back Calder Cup finals in 98 and 99, and 99 and 2000, I should say. And that's really how you build your team. So the veterans are needed, but you definitely need the young prospects to make sure that the cycle keeps going. And who knows, maybe we see Rusek in Buffalo next year. Maybe we see Kulik. These are players that
Rusek was not on my list of 9. I already had him
In Buffalo, you know, yes.
Yeah, but I mean, he could very easily not. Like, he's certainly not counting or guaranteeing himself anything. He knows the journey ahead and there's no guarantees. So, yeah, I mean, if Rusek were back, I mean, there's 10 forwards without even getting any of the Rusek is older on a, veterans.
He's on a one-way next year, so that may make the decision early on in camp, but you got to earn it, right? Like, look at Benson this year. There is no guarantees. You earn it, you're there. And that may take in Matt Savoy's spot. That may take in somebody else's spot, but you got to earn it. And I think that's going to be the message in camp.
Right. And the biggest thing for the Amerks, I would say, will be how do they look on the blue line next year, considering that this year we largely saw Novikov and Metsä playing together. We saw Ryan Johnson get a half year in after playing with the Sabres. Yeah. You know, you have Komarov coming out of the queue. Well, there's four. That still leaves room for Davies and Ciccone if they want them back. And if those two players who were very good and have been very good together for a couple of years now, you know, to come back as leaders. I hope it happens. I have tremendous respect for Davies and how he's gotten to this stage. And, you know, again, his dream is still out there. He's played about, you know, roughly 25 games in his NHL career, but he might be playing the best hockey of his life right now. So at age 27, somebody might else also see that elsewhere, right?
There's always these players that develop a little bit later when given an opportunity. Maybe that's one of them.
Yeah. And, you know, again, just it was, and there'll be lots obviously to discuss here with the Amerks, but it was a gritty end to the season. You know, it was 3-2 with less than 6 minutes left. And even though it wasn't a high chance game, you're sitting there going, something good could still happen here. And you get a couple of weird things. We'll probably talk about that more, but obviously the big news today was Seth Appert and him being added to Lindy Ruff's staff as an assistant coach. And of course, when we're talking Sabres and Emmerichs and, the regular season coming to an end for Buffalo a while back and the continuation of many seasons because of the World Championships right now that are on. So a little enticement for you to follow the guys who are over there right now, including Paterka, Dahlin, Olofsson going head-to-head this afternoon. We want you to not only follow the Worlds, but take advantage of a Sabres season ticket membership starting at $26 per game for a limited time. You can check it out at sabres.com/world. We're back after this on Sabres Live.
Back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Puzzled every day for any number of reasons, Marty, but often how there's, you know, more focus on teams that are losing than teams that are winning. It's like this microcosm of life. Like, nobody celebrates the good. You know, it's just like, so I go to NHL.com today, like, shame on me. Kidding, of course. But like, I see Bruins everywhere. It's like, I don't care. I don't care if the Bruins think they're not going to lose game five. Like, why don't we talk about Sasha Barkov and put him in the full screen and showcase his ability, right? It just, none of it makes sense to me. And anyway, I'm assuming that it's the same situation in a large part of Canada right now because of Connor McDavid and the Oilers being down once again in their series.
Yeah, so what are you looking at? Well, McDavid, you got to be better, right? You only got one goal in the series, and the Oilers...
coming off a four-point game, dude.
I get that, but I'm just saying that's what the people are going to look at. The Oilers lost. Before the series was... The Edmonton Oilers are going to sweep the Vancouver Canucks. That was the... Like, it was Canada against Vancouver. It wasn't just the Oilers against Vancouver. Like, the word in Canada was... This Vancouver Canucks team will not even be able to stand with the Edmonton Oilers. Arthur Shelovs will not even be able to see what's happening in front of him. This is not the Nashville Predators. I'll tell you this. Arthur Shelovs last night, holy yes, he was good. He was on. The shot attempts in that game were 87-33 for the Edmonton Oilers. The high danger chances were 18-9 for the Edmonton Oilers. The Oilers did a ton of trying to break through. And all the Vancouver Canucks did is, they got a hat trick by Brock Besser, but wasn't really because Elias Lindholm got the first goal and it was adjusted in the first intermission. But they got their three goals in the first, and then they kind of just sat there and they let Shelovs and, get himself very comfortable and making saves and really saving their game. I felt like it was Shelov's game, and he should have been first, second, and third star.
But this is the norm for Vancouver with low shot totals, as we saw in the Nashville series. So this is their thing right now, which again goes back to my earlier wide brush commentary on I don't like this. Yeah. I look at Vancouver with Quinn Hughes, Brock Besser, Elias Pettersson, Elias Lindholm, on and on and on it goes.
Miller,
why can't they play that way instead of this way? But whatever works, right? At the end of the day, if you win a cup, no one's going to complain about it, although everybody who's not in that market will complain about it for 20 years, which then becomes a drag on the league because then they refer to it as a dead puck era. But anyway, I'm going off in a billion tangents here.
One
but
year,
you know what
one
I mean?
Year like, doesn't change it. But yeah, I get what you're saying. It's like,
yeah.
And it's not
well,
been just
it's
one game for Vancouver.
Right?
It's not just one game for Vancouver. It was like that against Nashville. 12 right. shots, they win a game 2-1. 15 right. shots, they win a game by scoring 3 of their last 5, right? That's really what it is. But so what Vancouver is doing right now, and I know, Nikita Zadorov got fined $5,000 for the cross-check McDavid at the end of the game. He doesn't care. Zadorov also said, you know what? Yeah, the Oilers got great support in Edmonton. Their fans are great. There's nothing to do in Edmonton, so they just support their hockey team. But he did it in a smiley Zadorov way. That was almost like, this is a fun guy. Like, I love this guy, right? But he also imposed his will on Evander Kane. He didn't care taking that penalty on Kane, flipping him over the board, and then continue to push him underneath the bench. And he's like, I'll continue to do what I'm doing. But, you know, I wonder if they woke up Connor McDavid in a sense and the Oilers in a sense by going after McDavid at the end of the game. And now Carson Soucy is going to get a phone hearing for his cross-check to the face of McDavid, which at first I thought he's not trying to cross-check him in the face. But then I remember Morgan Rielly, you know, going after Ridley Gregg and saying, I wasn't trying to cross-check him in the face. I wanted to cross-check him in the shoulder, in the arm, but my stick rode. This is not the exact same thing, but Carson Soucy is not trying to cross-check McDavid in the face. But the end result is a cross-check to the face. And I think for that reason, the Vancouver defenseman is going to get suspended.
For how long?
Do I dare say one game?
It's probably the only answer, sadly. I don't
know
what's
the penalty
in that series
either. Well, at first I didn't think it deserved a suspension, so I'm glad I got to think about it because I'm like, okay, it's like a hit, right? If I hit you in the head with my shoulder, but you all of a sudden change your body positioning at the last minute, like you reach or you got bumped or you lose your balance and I catch you in the head, well, they take that into consideration. But I still am responsible for catching you in the head, especially when it comes to a cross check on the league's best player at the end of the game, not a hockey play. So that to me is going to deserve at least a one game suspension.
What should Bennett have got for what he did to Marchand?
I maybe I'm in the minority, but I have a hard time believing that Sam Bennett targeted Brad Marchand's head with his right arm as Marchand is going to hit him. And Duffer, I'm going to say this. In the 80s and early 90s, there's certain players, and you know all these players are. If I went to hit you and you're one of those players, I would eat Sherwood. And what eat Sherwood means is if you're coming to hit me, I would brace with my stick up and you would get it in the face. Now, the game is not there anymore. I get that. What Sam Bennett does often is when you come to hit him, he braces himself with his hands up, almost saying, if I catch you in the head, it's not on me. You came to hit me. I don't think Sam Bennett wanted to inflict the pain that he inflicted Brad Marchand. But when he connected with Marchand, he looked back like, ooh, I hope they didn't see it because he had hit him pretty good. I don't think it was a suspendable offense. I think it's a penalty. And I also don't think it was meant, like it was not premeditated. Like it wasn't premeditated. It was like Marchand's coming to hit him and what happens, happens. But I think it was a little bit sneaky. I wouldn't have suspended him for that, though. And you know what? The Bruins, like, you're chasing around the Florida Panthers. Marchand, you don't need to hit Bennett at that point. Like, just turn around, go to the bench. Like, Pasternak is punching everybody. They're trying to fight Barkov. They're not going to win that way. They're not going to beat the Florida Panthers that way. Florida is way more physical than Boston. I don't know why they're chasing them. Even in game four, they're chasing them everywhere, trying to hit the Florida Panthers. It's not going to work.
You're sensing my disbelief here, right?
Yeah, I sensed it in the text message.
You're like, you know, I didn't even respond to that text message. There was another person that was inflammatory.
No, I know. That's why I sensed it in the non-response. And I said that I didn't think it was going to be a suspension. Because I'm like, yeah, you know what? Like, to be honest with you, like, if Brad Marchand comes in, hits Rasmus Dahlin, I want Dahlin to just say, I'm going to stiffen up. And if I catch you in the head and it's accidental, so be it. Like, there's certain players on the ice that I would have antennas.
But you have to ask yourself, if Marchand did that exact play to Dahlin, which he's come very close to, like, everyone's losing their mind here. Like, it's a suspendable act. It's a cheap shot. It's dirty. It's Sam Bennett. Like, what more do we need other than the television broadcast to do its job? Sorry, again, I'm in a glass house here, but we've got 900 angles of this now. How come it didn't become in the forefront in the moment?
Because it was a nothing play. At first, when you see it, it's a nothing play.
It's and the you're captain like- of the Boston Bruins leaving the game.
I get it. But it looked like a nothing play. And really, again, wow. I'm going to say this. The way that I saw it was Marchand goes to hit Bennett. Bennett is going to stiffen up and really protect himself in a way that, like, it's Marchand coming to hit you. You never know if he's going to get the elbow up or whatnot. He connects with his face, with his right arm. Absolutely. Was it enough to have Marchand miss games? Yeah, he connected really good. I don't think in that moment it was on purpose. I think it was, I'm going to stiffen up. I'm going to get my hands up. And if I catch him, I catch him. And he caught him more than he thought he would. And that's the way I saw it. Look.
And you have to be responsible for it based on what you just said about Susie.
Yeah. But again, yeah. Like a hand to the face. You know how many times that happened in a game? A hand to the face on a hit, a punch to the face in front of the net. That happens right. A lot. It's
and
a roughing penalty.
And if 18 guys left the game with a concussion or suspected concussion or some sort of head injury or something that has felled Marchand, then there'd be nobody left to play. This is the thing. Like, it's not just a play because he left the game. He's the leader of the team. How does nobody see this? I didn't see it because I wasn't watching. Yeah. Honest truth, like, I was at a concert. I could care less, you know? But then I saw it in real time,
and I saw the replay, and at first, until we saw the reverse angle, and yeah, okay, that reverse angle wasn't made available until 48 hours later, right? Like, really, like, we watched a broadcast yesterday, and they're like, oh, we got a new angle that we didn't see. But until I saw that angle, it was like, that's a 0% nothing play. And when I saw the angle, I was like, okay, yeah, he caught him good. He caught him good, but I still don't think it was, hey, you're coming at me and I'm like cocking this fist and I'm going to like respond and hit you right in the face at the same time. Now, but we all have different opinions and I don't have a problem debating it. I don't have a problem debating it because, okay, there's different opinions and Bennett definitely is one of those players that played a game on the line. And Marchand definitely is one of those that plays the game on the line. I think of Michael Pekka. Remember, Michael Pekka would be so dirty in the way that he hit people. He would inflict pain. And when he got hit submarine by Darcy Tucker, it was like, okay, well, Pex, you played the game on the edge. You delivered those hits yourself. It's going to happen sometimes against you.
But the era that Michael played in, those hits were allowed. Submarine knee shots have never been acceptable in hockey. There was a dramatic, that's why the incident was what it was.
Yeah, it was a dirty play, but I love Pex. I remember thinking the same thing at that time. Look, I've seen Pex do a lot of crazy things when he hit people. I saw him jump and hitting Sergei Gonchar at center ice with an elbow, knocking him out in Washington. I was in net.
Was he suspended?
Huh?
Was he suspended?
I don't think he was.
Probably not. which therein lies the problem, because we still hear commentary on a nightly basis. Oh, you're going to take out the other team's star players and you got to seek retribution for a 6-1 loss, especially if you're up late in the game, and blah, blah, blah.
Well, like, but there's part of that that I get, because I've had that those feelings and energy flowing through my body of, you know what, like, I don't care what it is. I don't care what happened. I'm going to stand up for my teammate, my friend, my whatever. And we talked about it last week. But I still, to this day, think, okay, the Bennett thing happened. You lose your captain, you're Boston. And then you start the game yesterday with Pasternak taking a penalty for punching somebody in the face in front of the net. Like, we're going to show you, Florida. Like, that's not working. Like,
it worked. They got up 2-0.
They lost. They took too many penalties in the Pasternak end, and they gave up a power play goal.
No.
And by the way, that goal shouldn't have counted. So yeah, Boston probably should have won, because that goal that Sam Bennett ends up scoring is clearly goaltender interference when he cross-checked Charlie Coyle into Swayman. And the league...
Charlie Coyle needs to be stronger.
Maybe so, but it's still a penalty. Like, I don't care if I just touch your skate and you fall. It's a trip. That's a cross-check. You need to be stronger. But in the end, like, the league's explanation of why the goal counted was they didn't feel like the contact limited Swayman from playing his position enough. Almost saying, hey, the goal would have counted anyway, that regardless of, but you can't think like that. You cannot, because we've seen so many times a leg, a stick, an arm make a desperation save.
Right.
And we don't know what could have happened. So I was like, oh, like yelling at my TV, like, this cannot be a goal. It cannot be a goal. Now, I will flip the script. Like, you know, if Sam Bennett makes the little contact that Charlie Coyle made, okay, just like Anthony Duclair in the first round against Bobrovsky, like, everybody's saying, well, Duclair's contact with Bobrovsky didn't affect Bobrovsky. That puck was going in anyway. It doesn't matter if the puck was going in anyway. Was the contact made before the puck went in? Was it in the crease? Was it illegal? Then there's no goal. That should have been a no goal. And the Bruins probably would have won the game 2-1, but instead they lose 3-2. Whatever, Florida's the better team.
Okay, on that note, we're back after this on Sabres Live.
Back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Very much to Lindy's point earlier on the show today, Marty has an opinion on everything, so I assume you took in the geomagnetic storm this weekend.
So funny enough, from where I was, we didn't really see a lot of colors, but if I had gone into East Aurora, right into town, I would have seen bright colors. Like, it was depending on where you were, you got to see some really good coloring or not, but I have vivid hockey memories of the Northern Lights, the Aurora Borealis. When I was a kid, late October, early November, I believe, we were playing street hockey still. It was cold, and our game of hockey, street hockey, lit up in green and blue because we could see them. I was maybe 10, 11 years old. I remember being in the street thinking, this is great. We're getting like, you know, arena, like lighting going on right now. It was awesome. But it was kind of cool this weekend for the ones that got to see it.
Well, worst of the weekend was our control room just now, not giving Tom on-screen credit for the great visuals we just saw on MSG. So thank you, Tom. But I don't know. I probably had a worst of the weekend, but that would just be, you know, accentuating a negative. So do you have something else you would like to add, best and worst of the weekend?
I'll say best of the weekend. Great turnout. Sorry we missed you, Duffer, at the Genesee Brew House on Friday afternoon
for the
three-game party. I am telling you, the most people we'd ever see, and usually we do it a little earlier in the day. This one was 3:30 to 5, and it was packed. Packed with people. Rooftop was full. Patio was full. Inside was full. What a great, lots of people from Buffalo that traveled to Rochester that had their, you know, Amerks and Sabres stuff on. So yeah, I want to give a shout out to the fans, Western New York, Rochester Americans fans that went down there and made the building as loud as it was. So even though it's Friday, I'll say best of the weekend.
Yeah, it was absolutely part of the weekend, and lots to dissect, obviously, from the end of the Amherst season and the Seth Appert promotion. My best of the weekend, unsurprisingly, a free concert, the Tulip Festival in Albany. More tomorrow. We'll see you then. problem because we still hear commentary on a nightly basis. Oh, you're going to take out the other team's star players and you got to seek retribution for a 6-1 loss, especially if you're up late in the game, blah, blah, blah.
Well, like, but there's part of that that I get because I've had that those feelings and energy flowing through my body of, you know what, like, I don't care what it is. I don't care what happened. I'm going to stand up for my teammate, my friend, my whatever. And we talked about it last week. But I still, to this day, think, okay, the Bennett thing happened. You lose your captain, you're Boston. And then you start the game yesterday with Pasternak taking a penalty for punching somebody in the face in front of the net. Like, we're going to show you, Florida. Like, that's not working. Like,
it worked. They got up 2-0.
They lost. They took too many penalties in the end, and they gave up a power play goal.
No.
And by the way, that goal shouldn't have counted. So, yeah, Boston probably should have won because that goal that Sam Bennett ends up scoring is clearly goaltender interference when he cross-checked Charlie Coyle into Swayman. And the league...
Charlie Coyle needs to be stronger.
Maybe so, but it's still a penalty. Like, I don't care if I just touch your skate and you fall. It's a trip. That's a cross-check. You need to be stronger. But in the end, like, the league's explanation of why the goal counted was they didn't feel like the contact limited Swayman from playing his position enough. Almost saying, hey, the goal would have counted anyway, that regardless of, but you can't think like that. You cannot, because we've seen so many times a leg, a stick, an arm make a desperation save.
Right.
And we don't know what could have happened. So I was like, oh, like yelling at my TV, like, this cannot be a goal. It cannot be a goal. Now, I will flip the script. Like, you know, if Sam Bennett makes the little contact that Charlie Coyle made, okay, just like Anthony Duclair in the first round against Bobrovsky, like, everybody's saying, well, Duclair's contact with Bobrovsky didn't affect Bobrovsky. That puck was going in anyway. It doesn't matter if the puck was going in anyway. Was the contact made before the puck went in? Was it in the crease? Was it illegal? Then there's no goal. That should have been a no goal. And the Bruins probably would have won the game 2-1, but instead they lose 3-2. Whatever, Florida's the better team.
Okay, on that note, we're back after this on Sabres Live.
Back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Very much to Lindy's point earlier on the show today, Marty has an opinion on everything, so I assume you took in the geomagnetic storm this weekend.
So funny enough, from where I was, we didn't really see a lot of colors, but if I had gone into East Aurora, right into town, I would have seen bright colors. Like, it was depending on where you were, you got to see some really good coloring or not, but I have vivid hockey memories of the Northern Lights, the Aurora Borealis. When I was a kid, late October, early November, I believe, we were playing street hockey still. It was cold, and our game of hockey, street hockey, lit up in green and blue because we could see them. I was maybe 10, 11 years old. I remember being in the street thinking, this is great. We're getting like, you know, arena, like, lighting going on right now. It was awesome. But it was kind of cool this weekend for the ones that got to see it.
Well, worst of the weekend was our control room just now, not giving Tom on-screen credit for the great visuals we just saw on MSG. So thank you, Tom. But I don't know. I probably had a worst of the weekend, but that would just be, you know, accentuating a negative. So do you have something else you would like to add, best and worst of the weekend?
I'll say best of the weekend. Great turnout. Sorry we missed you, Duffer, at the Genesee Brew House on Friday afternoon.
For the
three-game party. I am telling you, the most people we'd ever see, and usually we do it a little earlier in the day. This one was 3:30 to 5, and it was packed. Packed with people. Rooftop was full. Patio was full. Inside was full. What a great, lots of people from Buffalo that traveled to Rochester that had their, you know, Amherst and Sabres stuff on. So yeah, I want to give a shout out to the fans, Western New York, Rochester Americans fans that went down there and made the building as loud as it was. So even though it's Friday, I'll say best of the weekend.
Yeah, it was absolutely part of the weekend, and lots to dissect, obviously, from the end of the Amherst season and the Seth Appert promotion. My best of the weekend, unsurprisingly, a free concert, the Tulip Festival in Albany. More tomorrow. We'll see you then.